left off last week in the middle of the discussion as to exactly how to define what's called the Kli Rishon and what's called the Kli Sheni. So based on everything that we said a week ago, 2 weeks ago, it should seem to be a very, very important question that we're raising, because the Gemara tells us that Kli Rishon is a potential problem of Bishul, or the most opinion would be even Bishul Meh Torah. So any Kli that was either on the fire now or at one time had been on the fire can potentially create a very serious problem. And if potentially it's a derisa, if I take raw food and I put it into a Kli Rishon, that would be a serious problem of Bishul. Whereas the Gemara says, in one fell swoop, in Shabbos, in the third breath, Kli Sheni and Mavashel. Whatever happens to the Kli Sheni, ignore it, forget about it, what's the big deal? It doesn't matter anyway. So it would seem to be very, very important for us to understand what exactly is Kli Rishon, what exactly is Kli Sheni. What makes the issue probably less significant is the fact that even though the Gemara does say Kli Sheni and Mavashel, for a whole series of reasons, practically speaking, we do not cook things in Kli Sheni as Bizman Hazeh. So one of the reasons being is that the Mishnah tells us that as a consumer called Kali Abishal, things that are very, very easily cooked can potentially become cooked even in a Torah in a Kli Sheni. And since we're not quite sure what are Kali Abishal or not Kali Abishal, therefore, practically speaking, we no longer cook things in Kli Sheni as Bizman Hazeh. There's another concern that some Rishonim interpret the Gemara to mean that Kli Sheni and Mavashel, that means on a level of Derais, at a Torah level, but with the Rabbanan, there would still be a concern of Mexican Mavashel. It still looks like Bishul, even a Kli Sheni. So, Lamaisa, somebody comes and asks you, Rabbi, can I cook in a Kli Sheni? The answer is no. Either because of the Suffolk Derais of Kali Bishul, because of the Suffolk Rabbanan, or Mexican Mavashel. So, if that's the case, that we are now, for the last 1,000 years or so, we're refraining from cooking in Kli Shenis, so why are we spending so much time? We spent the whole week last week, we spent another time today. Why are we spending so much time differentiating between Kli Rishon and Kli Shenis? At the end of the day, you can't do anything in either of them. So the answer is that there's a big difference between that which you're not allowed to cook in a Kli Rishon and that which you're not allowed to cook in a Kli Shenis. When we speak about cooking in a Kli Rishon, we look at it with very, very chumrah eyes. We look at it as a real, real concern in our Torah, and we're not going to have any kulos whatsoever. When we're dealing with the Kli Sheni, so we're already looking at it as through a half open eye. We're already not so sure we even have a problem. It's only a suffix, it's a derabbanan, it's a shayla derabbanan, it's a chumrah. So therefore, we find it posted time and time again that whenever we're dealing with shayla Kli Shenis, if you can have other tzadim halacha, there are other reasons to be making. Again, we'll have to see as we go on discussing bishul weeks to come what some of those other potential leniencies are. But if we can come up with other kinds of kulas that we would start together, we're going to be very, very maker when it comes to Kli Sheni. So it's still very important for us to know what is Kli Rishon, what is Kli Sheni. So last week we spent a lot of time discussing one shaila that the Rishonim discussed explicitly as to where to draw the line between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. That was the issue of Iruin. When you pour something from a Kli Rishon onto raw food, the water in stream, the water in midstream, is that considered to be already a Kli Sheni because it already left the Kli Rishon? Or do I say, no, that Kozman hasn't landed in the Kli Sheni, it's still called Kli Rishon? Well, that's a big enough kamina. That, you know, the issue of making tea, as we spoke about last week, that can we possibly permit making tea by simply pouring water from a Kli Rishon onto a Kli Sheni? That was a big, big question. Is that called Iruin? Not, what is the status of Iruin? So now we move on to other examples, some very, very practical cases in our kitchen, which becomes practical, not only in terms of Shabbos, but practical in terms of Chos Kashrus as well, as to just to precisely define what is a Kli Rishon and what is not a Kli Rishon. So remember a throwback to 2 weeks ago, we mentioned that the Rishonim were bothered with a challenge that how can it be that Kli Rishon is Bishul and Kli Sheni is not Bishul? The other day, the heat is the same. How cold did it get? It transferred from one pot to the bowl. It went down an iota of a degree. How in the world does that change it that we apply the rule Me'ika Mikra Din Kli Sheni is not a problem of Bishul? So one of the many suggestions that we gave was the most famous one, perhaps, is Tosfos in Masechet Shabbos. The Tosfos in the third part of Shabbos suggests that a Kli Rishon has something that a Kli Sheni doesn't have, and that is the funnest mechamos, that the walls of the Kli Rishon are hot because it was on the fire one time. Whereas Kli Sheni, by definition, is already on the way up. The heat is already dissipating. It's already one step removed because the walls of the bowl, the walls of the cup, are makaros. So even though in terms of degree of temperature of the water, it may be the same, but since you have that fact of the funnest makaros, that changes everything. And that's ultimately what's responsible for something becoming, going down a notch, going down a level to the level of Kli Sheni. It's based on this that one of the late Rishonim, the Issa v'Hefter. The Issa v'Hefter was a very, very small sefer. Issa v'Hefter Aruch was written. It was written by a Talmud of the Trumas Hadeshen, right around the 1400s or so, and it became almost like the classic sefer in terms of the prelude to Yerodea. Whenever you learn Yerodea, learn Hukos Kashrus, Chavos Tarovos. So we're learning it now in Yeshiva this year, you know, those sugyas, and the Yisvehet becomes a classic text that there are more references all the time. So the Sefer Yisvehet Ba'oruch, you would think by its name that it must be like 10 dayim. It's about this big. So I don't want to culture, but Yisvehet Ba'oruch, so he has the following suggestion. He says that since the whole idea, according to Tosfos, that something becomes a cliché because it has the funos, hamakaros, whenever you have food that doesn't have that funos hamakaros, what does that mean? What if it's what's called halacha dova gush? What if it's a solid piece of food? So normally the imagery of Tosfos is that I take a liquid, I take boiling water, and I pour it out of a tea kettle into a bowl. So then I can understand, so here's the matter, that's called funos hamakaros, that's called cliché. What if I take a big hot piece of potato kugel and take it out of the pot on the fire and I plop it down onto a plate? Or what if I take a big hot potato from a chulent, take it out of the chulent pot and put it down on a plate, and then I move it to another plate. And 15 bowls later, says the Isabhatha, the problem is that it doesn't have that dimension of the funnels makaros. There are no defunnels whatsoever. So you have nish defunnels bechamos, nish defunnels makaros. So what do you do? So the Isabhatha suggests that item retains its status of Kli Rishon forever and ever and ever, or at least until it gets cold. If it reaches the point where it's no longer hot, global Yatzel Hezbo, you touch it, it's not hot anymore, so then obviously it can't be Mavashel. But in the state that it's hot, it has the status of a Kli Rishon, even though it's already been transferred 10 times over. What would this mean in Halacha? This would mean a disaster for us in Halacha. Namely, if I take a hot potato out of a chulent and I put it onto one bowl, another bowl, it's still blazing hot. If I put any raw food onto that potato, and the food begins to melt onto the potato, begins to cook by the heat of the potato, that's bishul deraisa, potentially, because that's still called halach le'chlimish. That was the chiddush of the Yisrael. The reason why I quoted from the Yisrael Hector, some people may be more familiar with it from the Maharshal. The Maharshal was the one who was most popular for subscribing to this idea. First of all, the Yisrael Hector came before the Maharshal. And second of all, the Maharshal says it, but he says it for a little bit of a different reason, a little bit of a different presentation. So we'll quote the Yisrael Hector / Maharshal. So if I slip back and forth, so it's all the same sheet. That sheet is known in Halacha as the Chumra of Dova Gush. So who was the Baal Plot? Who was the one who didn't buy into this whole story? The Ramah. The Ramah quotes is that the whole thing is not true. He says, that the fact that it has wolves, doesn't have wolves, that doesn't impact, the bottom line is it's already one step removed from the original kli that was cooked in, that is not considered to be a problem. So if you think about it, this machlokes between the Yisrael and Mashal against the Ramah is not only broken with the Shabbos, but actually the original machlokes was really presented in Hos Kashrus, because they had to grow the Sefer Hos Kashrus. So the real concern, the original concern, had to be with Hos Kashrus, which is very, very significant for us. So let's go back just for a moment to Yerodea in order to appreciate the relationship between Aruch Chaim and Yerodea for these purposes, for Shabbos and Kashrus. The ABCs of Hos Kashrus, in terms of things transferred taste, giving more time one to another, is that it's only true when there's heat that's present. Those who are learning with us school a little bit in the mornings and make sure, so we're ready to begin to see this idea that the mamash yisoda yisoda of hilchos tarovas of treifa food, treifing of kosher food by touching, is only if there's heat. The Gemara says in one fell swoop, tzonim b'tzonim b'hadocha, if two cold foods touch one another, a cold piece of chazir and a cold piece of kosher, they touch each other, just wash off the meat and it's fine. Or in basa b'chalav, if a cold piece of cheese touches a cold piece of meat, just wash it off and it's okay. I'm not saying your mother's going to like that, but I'm saying that that's the halacha. Tzoni b'tzoni is b'hadocha. Once you introduce heat, then you have a lot of problems. Then the ta'am, then the taste begins to transmit from one to another, and then you have a whole series of couples of problems in the kashrus. What's considered to be heat for the purposes of causing a problem? So this was a major machlokes of Rishonim. So a whole group of Rishonim said the definition of heat for these purposes is whatever heat can create bishul in Hilchos Shabbos. Whatever your standards are as to whether something can actually affect cooking, that's called heat, and that's called bleas, that's called transmitting of tastes. Therefore, a whole group of Rishonim say, just as klisheni enim of ashel, me'ikra din, so too klisheni enim of lia, that there are no bleas in a klisheni. That let's say you have blazing, blazing hot food, kosher food or non-kosher food that touch one another, if they're in a klisheni, then nothing happens. It's literally just wash it off, and call it a day. Aye, it's hot. It doesn't matter. Halachically, bleas don't take place unless halachically, bishul could take place. That was one group of Rishonim. Another Rishonim say, the two processes are not compared to one another. Bleah l'chud or bishul l'chud. Even in klisheni, bishul would take effect. Can you imagine the ramifications of the shayla? There's such significant ramifications. It happens all the time. Shayla's maizim l'chud. person has their cup of coffee, so we'll play it out here. So what is the status of this cup of coffee that's sitting on the table? So how many times over is it? It's definitely not a klirishon. This thing was probably not on the fire either. I would imagine else it would have burned. So it probably, I imagine what happened back on Dunkin' Donuts is that they probably took a klirishon of coffee, or a coffee out of an urn, out of a coffee maker, whatever it was, they poured it into one of these things. So one of these things now becomes a klisheni, and the cup in front of you becomes a klishelishi. What if you go by mistake to the drawer and you take out a fleishik spoon, and you just use this fleishik spoon an hour ago, and now you start using it to stir the coffee? Do you have a bliya problem or not? Some of the particles, some of the molecules, some of the tab, some of the taste inside that spoon, do they enter into the coffee and now potentially trade up your coffee? Or vice versa, does that happen? Assuming there's milk in the coffee. No milk in the coffee, okay. If there's milk in the coffee and the coffee is very hot, and you don't put in too much milk, it's not hot anymore, a little bit of milk, and now some of the milk comes out of the coffee into the spoon, did you just trafe up your spoon or not? So Hefter Hisham say no. Hefter Hisham say Hefter go, you know what? Cliche. So far removed from Kli Rishon, ain't a Vashon. So you even tell him, just wash it off and you're good to go. Your mother for sure would like that. So that's how the Ramah paskins. Now, one year a day paskins that the Ik, Amik, Radim, and all dust settles. That's what we paskin in Halacha, that Klisheni, and Mavashim, Klisheni, and Mavliyah, and call it a day. But many Acharonim disagree with it. Therefore, the Bel Yav Poskim, you're there right, that our practice, the common practice, is Lechetchila not to rely on this. That what we would do is we would kasha the spoon, we would throw out the coffee. But we're not going to be so makel so quick. If it's a big upset, it's a big Shasachach, a big Tzarech, or something, then maybe we'll be a little bit more makel. But we're not so convinced that just because it's a klisheni for Shabbos purposes, therefore it doesn't affect them as cash. But if you go down the route of those poskim, like there are more, that kli rishon is a problem, klisheni is not a problem, where does the dove gush fit into this picture? So what would the halacha be in the following case? If a person takes a big piece of chicken, a good hot geshmak, a dove gush, out of the pot and puts it down on his plate. And then he takes a milchik fork, a knife, and starts cutting away at this chicken. So wait a second, do we have a bleed problem or not? So it's blazing hot, it's much falling out, so let us know. Is that a problem or not? Ben Yom are the worst of the worst. You just used that fork, hot fork, for eating pasta and cheese 10 minutes ago. So now you use that fork and stick it into the chicken. Is there a kashrus problem or not? Is your chicken potentially become trafe? Did your fork now become trafe? Everything has to be kashered. Did your plate maybe go, what's going on? So let's work through the question from a Shabbos and a kashrus angle. So if you hold, like many of the Acharonim who say that when it comes to bliyas, Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni don't interest us, everything is bliya no matter when it is, no matter when it's hot, so then obviously we're going to have a problem there. But if you hold really truly like the Ramah, that whenever you have Kli Sheni, it's Einu Mavashal, Einu Mavliya, so there's no kashrus problem, but Chalal, because everything is Kli Sheni, it looks like you're good to go. Comes the Marshal, comes in and says, you're not so good to go so fast, because what you have is a Kli Rishon. The chicken was removed 16 times, but it's a double gush. It's a big, thick, fat piece of chicken, and therefore it doesn't have the kulo of the fatas makaros. So al pi halacha, it's still the equivalent of a kli rishon. So you have a problem in terms of focus kashas. But guess what? The Ramah is making that also, because the Ramah disagreed with the Marshal, disagreed with the Sveheter, and disagreed with the Rishonim who say that kli sheni is mavliya. The Ramah was the biggest maker. Not everything on this. The Ramah says that kli sheni and a mavliya, and double gush is not called a kli sheni. According to the Ramah, lemais, according to, I just say everyone follows this, according to the Pesach of the Ramah, if you have a piece of chicken on your plate, very, very hot, and you cut it with a milk like the knife before, it's fine, it's not a problem, it's okay, everything's fine, because nothing at all to worry about, because everything is cliche.
Does the fonts of Makaros depend at all on the
material, styrofoam? Oh, you're a big chumratus. So in the free dictators, when they used to have styrofoam, now didn't they just, is it against the law now, styrofoam? No, isn't it?
In New York City, I think.
New York City, it's against the law. So some places, they ask it. No? Am I right?
Yeah, somewhere
can have styrofoam. It's ruined the environment. Global warming, we have some reason now. Somewhere can't have the styrofoam. So some poskim wanted to raise a red flag about the styrofoam. And they wanted to say, oh, yeah, maybe styrofoam, you know, the fun of the Karos. I said, if that's true, so then the whole principle of cliche just fell by the wayside. So the urn and Ohr HaTorah in the old days when we had styrofoam cups, obviously didn't rely on that cooler, because the whole cooler is making cliche and everything. So I'm posting out a chumra that styrofoam, everything is a clear shirt. a big, big question. That's true. Anyway, nobody should walk away with any conclusion about what I just said about the chicken and tell your wife everything is okay. No, not so fast. We have all the things. There's sakinas, there's pressing down. A lot of other factors that are thrown into this mix. At the end of the day, the later parts of the Taz, the Shas, we shouldn't really rely on them outright. So therefore, we're not so excited about just calling it a cliche and calling it a day. But at least Bikaro, at least in pure Lomdas, the Ramah was very, very makel that cliche the Ein and Levasha, the cliche the Mavliya, and the Bagush, it's called a cliche, everything is Kabbalah.
Do you have a problem with the Shlach or
the Shlach? Would you have a problem? No, Dover, the Gemara is Beferish, that there's Ein Bishlach and Bishlach, at least by the Yavish. You mean you want to know, could I put something on it? Oh, I want to pull a ketchup onto my... Okay. So we're, let's hold off to answer that question until we get to a little bit about Ein Bishlach HaMishal, because a lot of things we're going to talk about now are going to combine together when we try to figure out how to place that lemaisa. So again, so the first issue that we raised was, we assuming there's a difference between Klavish and Klishen, which we're not even sure really exists for us practically, but assuming there's a difference, so where does Dava Gush fit into the picture? It would appear that according to these machmirim, if you're willing to go down this route with this heter, so that it comes out that as we mentioned before, this is very important in Hilchos Shabbos, that we have to take a look at any davar gush with the eyes of big machmirim, and say every hot potato and every hot piece of meat from a shoulder, every potato cover, you name it, it's a davar gush, it spells disaster, that's called bishul gom, shal bishul deraisa. The problem is that there seems to be a Gemara that is outright against this. That's a Gemara that appears in the Masechet Chulin. That's when we get to Kol Boker. See, now it's September. This is probably closer to April or May time. So we'll get to some of the sugyas later, beginning of Parak Barbos, the beginning of the 8th Parak. So we'll talk about this again, but we'll just talk about it now. This one happens Kol Boker. It's what's relevant for this purpose is that there's a Gemara in the beginning of the 8th Parak of Chulin that is searching high and low to find the case of Bos Bechol Dirais. And we made reference to this Gemara last week or 2 weeks ago. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to have fleishiks and milchiks at the table at the same time. So if I'm eating meat and you're eating a pizza, that's a problem. Unless you put down a tablecloth, you put down a hecky, do something to separate between the two. But if we're just eating together, it's a problem. What's the problem? We're afraid that lest the person takes some of the food and mixes it into the other food, and maybe that'll become a bas b'chol. The Gemara says, what's going to happen? Give me a case of bas b'chol d'araisa. How could you possibly have a case of bas b'chol d'araisa? There's no case. Who's eating out of a pot? If you're not eating out of a pot, so everything is a cliche and a mavashel. The Gemara says, no, how come I'm skinny eating out of a pot? So Gemara made two mishigoyim sitting, one guy eating his chold out of his pot, one guy eating his pasta and cheese out of a pot. And then we said last week that going to some post, there's a fire under the pot, because also not bishul deraisa, crazy mishigoyim cases. So come the later, Achavarim say, wait a second, hold the phone. If the Yisavet is right, that whenever you have a double gush, it's by definition called a klirishon, no matter what pot, no matter what plate it's on, I have such a simple case. It's partial, it's obvious. I'm eating a good stack of pizza, I'm eating a hamburger, and you're eating a slice of pizza. I'm in a double gush, and you're in a double gush. We're both double gushes. So why isn't that the case? Why isn't he going to raise it back and forth? And the sugar is eating out of a pot, he's eating out of a pot, he's got a sterner one to his pot. It's so simple. I'm eating a hot piece of meat, and you're eating a hot piece of cheese, and they're both of a gush. I'll take a piece of your cheese and plop it onto my meat. That'll be bas b'chol d'araisa. So, l'chorah, for the fact that Gemara didn't give the most obvious scenario, that seems to undermine this entire chorah. Oh, so the later chorah points out that no, it wouldn't be true. That case of bishul with a dava gush would be bishul for Shabbos purposes, but wouldn't be bishul for bas b'chol purposes. Why? Because when it comes to bas b'chol, many Rishonim say, Rashi and Tosfos and Hagen write, that derech bishul asotar means that l'sabashu be b'chol of imo, it has to be cholo. It has to be a liquid. It has to be a bishul with a liquid medium. If you roast, you fry according to many, you roast, you barbecue, bas b'chol together, you grill bas b'chol together, that's not bas b'chol d'araisa. According to many, many Rishonim, if you take the following, and this one, please don't tell me when I said this, but if you take a hamburger, and put a slice of cheese on top of it, and go to Burger King, and put it on the grill, and have it mamish juicy, you know that picture, you know, I'm going to try to test my bikinis from days gone by, maybe I'll get it right, or maybe not, we'll see. Two beef patties, special sauce, cheese, put onions on a sesame seed bun, right? Okay. You know how many years ago that was? That was a couple of decades ago. So if you could pull off a cheeseburger, according to some Rishonim, it's not possible to hold right, so. It's only drapon. You know why? Because that's not called bishul. So in order to be bishul deraisa, you have to have a liquid, you have to have a milk. You can't have cheese. Cheese doesn't create bas b'chol deraisa. If that's the case, Eliot says correctly, then deraisa is the shkem raya. that the Gemara is looking for Bas B'chol D'Araisa, you can't hide behind double gushes. Double gushes, by definition, don't have a liquid. There's no liquid. It's not going to be D'Araisa anyway. So when all the dust settles, we're not quite sure what the answer to this question is. And therefore, in the Choshavos, we tend to be a little bit more machmer. So we try to avoid cooking things on Dvarim Gushim. So we're a little bit weary about the double gushes. We don't just take the attitude that, well, it's a cliche, and a cliche, everything is good to go. So this is the source for the following chumrah. This is the source for the cholent bowl chumrah. There are many people on Shabbos lunch, when they eat cholent, they like to have cholent in a special bowl, a separate bowl. Why is that? Because there are a lot of things on your plate on Shabbos that may never have been cooked. You may have lettuce, you may have salad on your plate, you may have coleslaw on your plate. You may have a lot of things there that are b'mishra. And if you take some cholent, and you put that cholent down on the plate, so that cholent is still very, very hot, and very often there's dvarim grushim, there's a good hot potato in that cholent, there's a good chunk of meat in that cholent. If that cholent touches some of the uncooked food, the raw food, according to some posts, you have a real problem with cholent. Again, I'm not saying this is an absolute necessity, I'm not saying everyone agrees to this. First of all, half the posts don't buy into this dvarim grush story, and second of all, it's all psychration, a little nichole, the guy doesn't particularly want that his lettuce from his salad to become cooked. Who says it's going to become cooked? It's not even going to be shots of lettuce, but there are a lot of reasons why this is not necessary, but that is the source for the chumrah. So there are those who want to be machmir, not to put down a hot cholent on the same plate as salad. So there are two ways of doing it. Either you eat the salad first, and then you start wiping up your plate, and or you do it a little bit more aesthetically pleasing, and you ask for a little cholent bowls. That's what we usually try to do at the house, a little cholent bowls, for that the very reason that lest somebody, I can't imagine who in the family, unless somebody decides that it's nice to start wiping off their plate with the napkin, so other people in the family prefer the cholent bowls rather than that. The mom will believe it or
that. That would be only if you took the cholent directly from the pot and put it on your plate. If you put it first in a bowl,
the problem is the gush, though. The meat never really took the big chunk of potato never really took the shape of the container. That's the problem. It means the beanie, the I guess it depends on your cholent, the consistency of cholent. Some cholent are, we're going to talk about this a little bit later on. We talk about the v'lach and the v'yavish. At cholent's v'lach v'yavish, the answer depends. Depends how much meat you can afford. So there's a lot of meat in there, it's the v'yavish, and it's mostly water. Like some yeshivas have cholent, so that's mostly the v'lach.
Okay. We're talking about cholent just because the assumption is the other food is not as hot as the cholent is coming right off the crock pot.
No, love that. Yeah, right. Could be a hot potato. Right. Look at that, right. I just thinking about cholent. Cholent's more of a problem because cholent spreads all over. It's all over the place. Potato, we
ate stuff.
Double gush stays in place. Okay, I think you double gush locked up, make sure it doesn't travel.
Usually,
okay.
It's the opposite problem. You have a piece of potato going on, and your coleslaw spreads all over.
Okay. So you have to start serving 16 different plates on Shabbos. So. or maybe don't eat any potato cooked with cholent. Now they're a little more. Okay, Vaisai, back to story. There's a rule here, by the way, whatever you hear in the Shia, it stays in the Shia. So let's see if we can move on to other potential issues in terms of defining. And again, we're not even sure why we're defining the Rishon Lishani, but we sense that's important to know the difference. What are some other potential shahs that come up in terms of Kli Rishon versus Kli Sheni? So your classic scenario of going from a Kli Rishon to Kli Sheni sounds like it should be an urn. I mean, you can't get anything more than that. An urn is a Kli Rishon, even though there's no literal fire, but there are electric coils, electric system, that's the halacha equivalent of a fire. So the water that's cooking in the urn is Kli Rishon water. You take a cup and you put it under the urn, the water comes out, and now you have a Kli Sheni cup. You transfer that to another cup, you have a Kli Shlishi cup, and you can make your tea, whatever, cook, whatever things you want to do with your Kli Sheni cup, Kli Shlishi water. But we're not 100% sure that what I just said is correct, that you actually transferred. The real, the physical transfer, we're not sure whether halachic way you actually transfer. What's the issue? So the Chazanish has a tremendous chiddush. The Chazanish says that the original model of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, think about the Zman HaGemara, was that I didn't have urns. So I had a tikkel, I had a pot of water sitting on fire. I take the pot off, and I transfer that to another Kli. That was critical, says the Chazanish. I took the pot off the fire. By the time the water hits the Kli Sheni, there's no shaykhus, there's no tsiruf, there's definitely a connection between the original source of heat and the water in the Kli Sheni. That's the model of Kli Sheni, the Chazal described it. That's not all to go on an urn, says the Chazal. If you have an urn, so the water is still connected to the fire. It means when I stick the cup underneath the spout, So the fire is still on, I mean, the urn is still on, the coils are still hot, and the water is emanating out of the Kli Rishon. Says the Chazanish, you know what that water in your cup is? That's Kli Rishon water. Because the water that's in the cup is mechuba yachad, it's the stream of water. So it's mechuba yachad to the water in the urn, and which is in turn is mechuba to the source of the heat, which is the electricity. So the Chazanish says that water is Kli Rishon water. So according to the Chazanish, you're one Kli behind. So now if I want to make a cliche, I have to pour into another cup. So before the Chazanish, everyone looked at that second cup of the Kli Shlishi. And again, we're looking for making the Kli Shlishi. According to the Chazanish, you have to add another cup. You have to keep on, you're always lagging one cup behind, according to the Chazanish. Do we postulate the Chazanish or not? That's a big, big question. So many, many Poskim question the Chazanish. Early Poskim, Chavos Das, others who don't seem to buy into that model of the Chazanish, but again, it's hard to say with certainty. So there are some who are machmer in this. There are some who, whenever they are looking to make Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, whatever the Kli they're looking for, so they always add a cup for good luck. That way they either the Kli Revere or Kli Shlishi, depending on what you think about the Chazanish. The Agav, this Chazanish, could have serious impact on those Kashas as well, because the same model that the Chazanish is raising about, the same concern he's raising about the urns, could be raised about our sinks as well. When I turn on the hot water out of the sink, so what is the status of that water coming out of this fat? Is that Iroi Kli Rishon, or is that worse than Iroi Kli Rishon? So it's usually assumed, it was usually assumed, that the water that's coming out of the spout is really Iroi from the Kli Rishon. Why? Where's the Kli Rishon? The real Kli Rishon is down in the basement. So you have a boiler that is, again, electricity's on, there's a fire, there's a bunch of fire underneath it. So you have water that's cooking up, that's Kli Rishon water. So everything is, that's all one big, big unit of Kli Rishon. Once that water is already leaving the spout, it's coming out of the sink, so then it's ois Kli Rishon, and now when it lands in the sink, so that was Iroi Kli Rishon. Worst case scenario, it was Iroi Kli Rishon. So Iroi Kli Rishon in Yoredeia is not so terrible. Again, we're leaving out all the details right now in terms of trafing up your fleshies and milchies, you have the wrong thing that rolls out of the sink. Iroi is not as bad as a Kli Rishon itself. So it was usually assumed that any water that's coming out of the sink is already Iroi Kli Rishon, and the sink is already Kli Sheni itself, so things are a little bit more lenient. According to the Chazanish, that is not always true. That depends on one small piece of information. Is the boiler on right now? If right now the fire is on under the boiler, and that treats all the water as being Kli Rishon water, so then even the water that's coming out of the sink is back to Kli Rishon water, and even the water that hits the sink is Kli Rishon water, because it's all Mechuba Yachad. That's going to have a big, big, big nafkamin lehadacha in terms of kasher and sinks. What method could you use to kasher sinks? We have a basic rule. You kasher the same way that it became treif. So if you hold that anything that may have potentially treifed up my sink, whether treifus or chametz or pesach, any problem that I have in my sink is only an iroi problem, because once the water is out of the boiler, it's already ois Kli Rishon. Even though it's all mechuba yachad, if you don't accept the chazanish, so then there's a very, very easy method to kasha sinks. Just take Iroi Kli Rishon water and pour it all over the place. You go to the tea kettle, fill up a tea kettle, fill up a pot of water and pour it in the sink. So you just kasha your sink. The same way that the water came out and the bli as well went into the sink, and it come out through the boiling water. But if the chazanish is correct, that the water that comes out of the sink is worse than Iroi Kli Rishon. It's Kli Rishon mamish, because it's mechuba yachad. So you can't take a pot of water off the fire and then pour it into your sink. You're one step behind. So you would have to kasher your sink with Kli Rishon. That's already a whole problem. How do you do that? That becomes very, very complicated to try to kasher your sink to Kli Rishon. So,
what?
Not so simple. It's not going to be so partial. That's going to work. Because not so simple. Okay, depending on how hot it's going to get this time, how do you know that the water now is on? Maybe now the boiler's off now. It's not going to be so simple. And you're going to have to get every single part of your sink. You're going to get every single part. It's going to become complicated. What? An urn. Okay, yep. Yeah, the urn would have to be plugged in. Okay, that I don't want to advocate kasher with a plugged in urn. I can't think of that sure is okay. I don't want anyone to, malpractice for kasher. So, I don't know, it becomes a little bit more complicated. So you may have to figure out punsim, how to turn your sink into Kli Rishon. So there are ways of doing it. There are many people who make, myself included, that most didn't hold it to Chazanish. Other tzadim sinks have other tzadim l'kula. There's always soap, and there's always tzadim grounds. There are a lot of other tzadim l'kula. So many people have the practice of the old stock way of kashering sinks, was just to take pots of water and just throw it into, pour it all over the sink and shine. So even on the point of Chazanish, that's a potential concern. So many, many people are making that for a variety of reasons. Anyway, I hope I see from some of the things we're talking about, so it's pretty important for us to identify precisely what exactly is klirisha, what exactly is klisheret. The next major issue we won't be able to complete, and I'll just touch it for a second, about what's called the klirisha, what's called the klisheret, this is going to have serious impacts down the line, is that what if we have the following model? I have a klirisha, I'm sitting on the fire, and rather than pour the contents out of the klirisha, I put something into the klirisha. It's called a ladle. I stick a ladle into the klirisha, and I take the ladle out. What is that ladle? Is that klisheni? Because it wasn't really on the fire. But the other thing wasn't on the fire. It was inside the pot, which was on the fire. So that's a klirisha. So what exactly is the status of that ladle? Do we view the ladle as just an extension of the pot? Or is the ladle somehow a separate entity that's called a klisheni? That's going to be a huge nafkamina. By the time the soup hits my bowl, I want to know, tachlis, what is my soup? Is soup klisheni or soup klishlishi? That's going to depend upon what the status of the ladle was. That's going to make all the difference in the world. Those are like the croutons in the soup, one put salt in the soup, one put pepper in the soup. That's going to become a huge question. And again, all going to depend upon how precisely the fine clear issue is. So I'll mention next week, we'll probably next week, that's probably the next shiur for a while. Next week is Slichas already. We don't have the shiur. We're going to Slichas. The next one is Erev Hashanah. So we won't have that one either. And the next one will be Tshuva, depending on the Slichas situation. We'll figure that out. The next one is Erev Sukkos. You probably won't have the next one. So either we'll talk about this in 2 weeks or in about 6 weeks. So reminder, we're going to play this.